This is Tatiana Harrison, Director of Voice of Youth. Every week, a different word or phrase, or sometimes it's like the O room, a room at Cook Middle School where you get sent when you've been bad. Whatever utterance conveys intimate meaning and experience, it's that closeness that Voice of Youth aims to convey. As the three hosts, LaKoya and Greg, 20 years old, and Amanda, 17, bring together whatever stories, interviews, or discussions are needed to create a comprehensive definition for the week's slang. And today's word? Bread. Not baked or broken, but made and lost. Earned and spent. For youth, much more than digits and decimals, instead a game or an accessory, a future or not. Listen, as youth determine the three things that money is supposed to be and the times it's not, short stories of everyday life, a visit to a paycheck advance store, a long-distance call to an anthropologist. Tonight, three hosts, three acts, Voice of Youth, The Bread Show.
I remember my mom would always say to me when I was younger,
you have a champ. I was 7 years old, living in Texas. My mom had sent me $40. My great-grandma put it in a Bible for me and told me it was there when I wanted it. I remember that $40 lasted me a month or two. I only spent a dollar a day on snow cones. To think how much I treasured that $40 and how I could even make it stretch out that long. Nowadays, money has lost that value to me. $40 could be spent in a second on an average day for me. Nowadays, I sometimes even use different words for money, like Skrilla, Yaper, Pay Scratch, Dough, Cheese, Gouda, Chalupa, and Bread. I'm host, LaKoya Simmons. Every week at this time, we define the words or phrases of our world. Today on our show, the word bread, one of the many ways we refer to money, how we experience it over time, and how that value of money changes with experience.
I remember my mom would always say to me when I was younger, you have a champagne taste on a beer budget. I didn't even know what that meant. I just knew my mom never liked spending money. This was the old school days where you had to clip out coupons like crazy, before the days of gift cards and Safeway cards and all that. And my mom never wanted to spend over the price, even if that meant only being 7 cents over. For some reason, I never followed her beliefs on this. Ever since I was young, I always liked things that cost more money than I had. It wasn't like we couldn't afford the essentials, but I always wanted something more. When people say that being rich isn't all that it's cracked up to be, I can understand, but I always envisioned myself having a champagne budget one day. You can create so many more things, you can experience more things when you have money. It's all about potential and possibilities, but it's also about dead ends and impossibilities. I'm host Greg Shimada. Today on our show, Bread, slang for money, the system that can lift you out of a hole or keep you stuck there.
I remember when I was really young, we were really rich. My parents were still together. We lived in a big house overseas because of my dad's job. We had a pool and even another guest house where the servants lived. A life for a kid where it was not money that I knew of, but toys, pets, and cookies. I knew of those things. But then my mom left my dad and we came back to America. It was a struggle even to get to America. Once here, my mom declared bankruptcy. We didn't have a place to live and we couldn't afford much. So we depended on the kindness and help of strangers and the government. Money was what I didn't have. While it used to be something expected, now it was a privilege. And as for these days, I fill out financial aid forms for college, knowing my mom makes too much for me to qualify. But we've saved too little to convert those numbers on the page to hard currency. So, what does that make money for me? Something like a ghost, there and not there, all at once. I'm host Amanda Wells. Today, on our show, Bread, how money is supposed to be the same for everyone, a dollar is a dollar and all that. But how, at the same time, the psychological value of that dollar is something no number can explain.
And now, it's time for Dial-A-Teen. Hit it, fellas.
I don't know if this one's going to be suitable.
Hello?
Hey, it's Oates. What it is? All right, but you got to be serious when you answer these questions.
Really?
Yeah. What is your name?
My name is Christopher Lawrence Lessinger.
How old are you?
I am 17 years of age.
Can you describe where you are?
I'm in a white room with a computer and about...
What is your definition of the word bread?
My definition of the word bread is people you can call your schnack.
Bread.
Yeah, people...
B-R-E-A-D.
Oh, bread. My bad. Money, Gouda, paper, whatever you make your daily wages, your hustle there.
Can you use it in a sentence?
I stack my bread constantly every day because it's what I do.
What's the last thing you spent bread on?
Last thing I spent bread on was some condoms.
What do you do for bread?
What do I do for bread? I kill people.
Yeah, right. Give me a break. You haven't touched a flea. Do you feel like you have enough bread?
Do I feel like I have enough bread? No, I constantly need more bread.
What is your name?
My name is Katie.
How old are you, Katie?
I am 18 years old.
Can you describe where you are right now?
I'm in my kitchen cooking dinner.
What is your definition of the word bread?
My definition of the word bread would be money or some sort of profit.
Can you use it in a sentence? You know, maybe you and your girls were making some bread this week, you know?
That would be correct.
What do you do to make bread?
I work.
What was the last thing you spent bread on?
I spent bread on a new sweater yesterday.
Do you feel like you have enough bread?
Right now I do, yes. I feel like I have enough bread.
Okay, that's good.
What a do, Cuzzo?
Well, what's up with it? Albert Oates, what's up, Doug?
All right, what is your name?
My name is Issa Ganayam from Fillmore Block, San Francisco 415.
How old are you?
I'm 17 years of age, currently living in Warner Park.
Can you describe where you are?
Well, me and my cousins right now are in my room, and then we're about to blow some trees in here. You know how we do it, real big.
What is your definition of the word bread?
Bread, man. Bread has a lot of definitions, man. You can go to the deli.
Referring to money. Shut up. Referring to money.
Referring to money. Bread, man. Bread means money, man. That's your cash. That's your hustle. You hustle for bread. Wop.
Can you use it in a sentence?
I touch more bread than salami. I use my bread in many different ways, including obtaining resources from fine supermarkets.
What's the last thing you spent bread on?
Man, I just bought a sack of the trees, cuz.
What do you do for bread?
It's an endless hustle, man.
Do you feel like you have enough bread?
Never have enough bread. You always have to be making that money.
What are other words you use for bread?
Other words, I use a guac.
Money, skrill.
Scratch.
Much tubas.
Grit.
I use skrill, scratch. Gouda, chalupa. Is that good enough for you?
Yeah, that's fine. Congratulations, interview's done.
This segment made possible by court-ordered probation.
So we just heard from some of our friends about the word bread. I'm your host, LaQuaya Simmons, and I really notice how the teen view of money is different from adults. They spend money on different things. A kid might buy that iPod knowing that they need to buy that jacket. You might freak out in a good way to get $10 an hour until that first set of bills rolls in. Then your value of that money changes. Money is thought to have three basic characteristics, we found. And we're revolving our show around these three elements. Number one, the element I'll be introducing to you, is the store of value. Money, academics say, acts as a store of value, meaning that it needs to have the same value over time. Unlike things people used to barter, like rugs that could fade or food that could go bad, money is supposed to stay the same. You might have heard of this characteristic of money in recent news, about how dollars could be replaced with coins to make a dollar last longer. This aspect of money makes people trust in it, and as they say, that's how money makes the world go round. But on this level, the psychological view of things, money seems to not store value over time. Like that same $40, If I opened up that Bible and found that money today, it would seem like such a little bit of money and be gone in one night. But it was that same $40 that I cherished so much.
What's up? I'm Greg Shimada. I've been reading about money too and what it's supposed to be. And according to the official definition of money, it's supposed to be a medium of exchange that makes the market move faster, creating more possibilities and products. But it seems like these kids that we interviewed, like a lot of kids that I know, are missing the flow of transaction. What I also heard was a lot of kids talking about marijuana. Weed is often used like money to trade for things. I guess because it's even more valuable, since if someone trades you something for weed, it saves the time and energy that it takes to get weed, plus the risk. But weed can never be money because it's not easily transportable and not very durable, which are the aspects under the category of money being an efficient medium of exchange. So I don't think weed is going to replace bread anytime soon.
And this is host Amanda Wells. And the last characteristic of money is a unit of account. This means that it is a standard numerical unit that is used in measuring all the goods, services, and other things to determine a cost of these things. Theoretically, one unit, like $1, must be exactly equal to another unit, another dollar. Yet, in context, when you think about what this means, it would mean that each dollar must be equal, even between personal transactions. But think about two people. One person makes $10,000 a year, while the other makes $100,000 a year. Do you think a dollar of the person who makes $10,000 is exactly equal to a dollar made by the person who makes $100,000? This idea of how money is relative to personal income, wealth, needs, ideas of happiness, and more is what I'll be focusing on during this show.
So, we've gotten our three characteristics of bread out there, and we've heard some quick answers to the questions of how teens see bread. But now we're going to get a little deeper into teen ideas of what money is, specifically how we need money for just about any and everything, and how we have to do any and everything to get it. These next three essays are from anonymous writers and voiced by our very own production staff here at Voice of Youth. We asked and they answered, what does bread do for you? And what do you do for bread? Here's some of the responses we got.
You need squirrels for everything, to eat, to have clothes, to get around, to live in other words. Squirrels goes faster than it comes, like my mom the other day went to the mall and wasted $150 in 3 shirts, 2 pants, and a pack of socks. Then we went to the flea market and she wasted another $50 in just 1 pants and a little outfit for my sister, and that was all at the flea market. For the bread from my sister's clothes and everything else, my dad has been working hard at the Petaluma Poultry killing chickens for more than 20 years. Right now he is working hard to save up for a car for me. Which brings up another major bank killer, gas. The gas that everyone needs and can't live without, especially here in the USA. Every gallon is almost $3. And think about it, your car wastes a certain amount depending on the car you have. If you have a big truck, it wastes a gallon every 10 to 15 miles. And imagine going to the nearest store. It's about 10 miles there and back. And plus, how much you waste at the store, and it wastes more gas at the stoplights. And that's just to the closest store. And I know people don't just go to the store once a day, and if you do, there's something wrong with you.
I earn bread through side jobs. You know, I do things like construction or landscaping for my grandparents or other family members. I have no full-time job yet, but it is very likely that I will get one at Round Table Pizza because the dude said he really wanted to hire me, maybe next week. So for now, I rely on my dad for money. My dad has a full-time job and makes really good money, doing whatever it is he does. He's real mysterious, actually, on this point. I remember a time when I tried to get my dad to tell me what he did. My friend Eric and I were upstairs in my room on my bed playing a game, while my dad was downstairs watching football. And then Eric brought up the mystery question, what does your dad do? So I went downstairs while Eric peered over the railing that overlooks my family room. He watched from above as I casually wandered over to the end of my black leather couch, where my dad was intensely concentrating on the Cowboys game. After all, they are his favorite team. I was like, Dad, Dad, what, Dan? He hollered frantically. Eric snickered at his reaction. Where do you work, Dad? I insisted. I told you, I do maintenance, he mumbled. Where? For who? I persisted. I don't know. Go away. After retreating back to the safety of my room, Eric and I just busted out laughing. I was half on my bed while Eric was rolling around on my feet like a newborn puppy. So my dad chooses to keep his business life a secret. But whatever he does, he makes a big loaf of bread for it. But back to my side jobs. They come about really randomly. I'm like a mercenary, out to clip unsuspecting hedges, move stubborn heavy things, pass out flyers no one wants. Like once, Mark, Eric, and I were sitting on Mark's couch watching Chappelle's Show when his neighbor Sheila knocked on the front door. She came in all casual, just asking what we were doing. Then she asked if we wanted to make some money. And guess what the answer was? 15 minutes later, we all got into Sheila's dirty silver Mustang, and she drove us to our section. We would be handing out flyers door to door. She gave us each a bundle of flyers about her husband's paint company and said that she'd be back in 4 hours to pick us up. We were taken by surprise because she hadn't told us beforehand how long we would be there. So we decided to split up and meet back in 2 hours. We stopped at this guy's house. It was a really nice wood house. As I went up to the door, a man stopped me and said, "Don't you put that crap on my door." "Alright, man." I shooed him away. He went back into his house. I glanced over at Mark and Eric, who were posting up on the other side of the street. I casually went to the man's truck and stuck a flyer right in his car door, and then continued on my way. Then the three of us went to the square across from Rancho and got some pizza at Mountain Mike's. 2 hours later, Mark's neighbor showed up and we each got a check for $150. So there you have it. That's what it's like, earning bread through side jobs.
What I need bread for is for life. What don't I need bread for? Without bread, the world would not turn. Bread is just an essential thing that we all as humans need for an everyday life. What I personally need bread for is gas. Oh my God, gas is just super expensive. I mean, I put $10 in my car and that just lasts me 2 days driving from Santa Rosa to Rona Park. There are even times when I had to miss going to school and also to appointments. It's just getting ridiculous. What have I done for bread? Damn, the only formal job I've ever had is a job at the infamous Quiznos, which by the way makes the best subs around. That's where I got a job to make some bread, money I mean. I heard about this place first in the newspaper. It said they were building a Quiznos on 4th Street next to the Plaza Mall and they were hiring in all positions. Right there, I thought for sure they would hire me. I was so relieved when later on, after the interview, I got the phone call from the owner saying I was hired. Yes, now I'm gonna be making some bread. I was hella ecstatic. So the next day, I went to go in for training. They had me preparing a lot of veggies. The tomato cutter was pretty cool. It was this metal thing that cut up a whole tomato in one motion. Is this all I have to do? This is a piece of cake, I told myself. But I sure didn't know what I had in store for opening day. Damn, I yelled. Lines as long as the eye could see. Okay, you all ready? My boss and manager told my coworkers and me. Hi, welcome to Quiznos, for here to go. That's the first thing I had to say to each and every customer. The day went by fast. At the end of it, I was thinking, what the hell did I get myself into? But anyways, I worked there for a while. Well, actually, I only worked there for like 2 or 3 months. The manager was really mean. She wanted things her way. One time, I was making a sandwich and I just cleaned my hands on my apron and she got mad at me. But I had seen her do that many times. So, soon enough, I gave my week's notice. God, I don't know how the heck my mom and dad keep up with working for over 23 straight years, doing hard jobs, like at an electronics factory, a chicken slaughter place, cleaning houses, cutting trees, baking bread, and they don't even get as much bread as what they really deserve. Why does it have to be that way? And do my parents have superpowers to be able to work that much? Well, superpowers are not. They really work hard for their bread, and I wish that I would have too at my job. I did the unbelievable. I quit. I felt like I was getting used and I couldn't stand that. But I bet my parents deal with this without quitting. Anyway, these days I still don't have a formal job, so bread, I need bread.
From KRCB.
From KRCB.
In
Santa Rosa.
You're listening to
Voice of Youth.
Voice of Youth.
The Bread Show.
The
Bread
Show.
That's right, The Bread Show. Brought to you by myself, LaKoya, fellow hosts Amanda and Greg, plus the writers of these little stories we just heard about bread. Now I got some questions to throw out at y'all. Some questions these stories brought out to me. There was some discussion about parents and stuff, and something that's really, I feel, relevant for me in my life with a lot of people that I know is that they don't sometimes have a strong connection with their parent. Youth are disconnected with their parents nowadays sometimes because the parent is out all day working and they don't really have time to spend with the kid, or the kid is at school and then the kid has to go to work too to help out with the family.
My parents, when I was growing up, when they were still together, my mom would work from 3 to 11 o'clock at night, and my dad would work from 6 in the morning till 3. So I would never, they would never see each other almost, you know, only on the weekends. So then, you know, when I would go to school, I would come home and my mom would be leaving and my dad would be coming home. And then my dad would be really tired from his work. I would want to go do other stuff and my mom wouldn't even know what was happening, basically.
When I was young, my mom would work all the time to try and support us and things like that. And what ended up happening is that my brothers started supporting me like more than my mom did, and just like cooking and stuff like that, because my mom would work really late at night.
I know. And another thing that came to my mind was the whole thing about retiring. My dad, you know, he sometimes talks to me about retiring and how he needs to just keep working and working until he can get to that point where he wants to stop, because he wants to stop at a certain point, I guess. And that's what he's been working towards this whole time. The whole time that I've been growing up, he's been working to the fact that he wants to get to a point where he can just retire and relax. But at that point, I'm going to be, you know, already an adult doing the same thing that he's doing, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been working for that point his whole life, and then he can just enjoy, but we're already, you know, grown up from childhood. You
know
what I mean?
It's kind of like it's irrelevant
now
or something.
You know, that was like the golden time that we were all living together. And now that I'm growing up and have to, you know, leave the house or go start my own family or do whatever I have to do as an adult, it doesn't matter anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm. And that just goes kind of like on a different value, like maybe family value, you know, a more personal value, is sacrificing a job and sacrificing having to go to work and sacrificing time with family and friends and even time for yourself. You know, is that valuable enough for whatever bread that you're getting?
Let's see. What kind of bread have we heard about so far? We've heard about what kids want it for and what they do with it. What happens when you want or even need money and you can't get it, and you don't have access to credit or can't get loans from a bank? Up next, we got a story about a place that fills this need. LaCoy and our director Tatiana went over to Cash Now, a spot where people can get paycheck advances. Roll it.
All right, we're here, and you want to actually explain where we are?
We're at Cash Now Santa Rosa. I'm Charlie Hines. We're located on Guerneville Road and cross street of Range Avenue in Santa Rosa, California.
Can you describe to us what it looks like here at Cash Now?
This office is about 700 square feet. The whole front of it's glass. All the glass looks out onto Guerneville Road. So there's a lot of light. We have neon signs advertising what we do, cash advance or payroll loans. We have the walls are alternate colors of white and money green. It's kind of bright, a bright kind of cheery, and actually very kind of a homey type atmosphere. We don't have the glass windows that makes you feel like you're walking into a high security building. It's more like a house or a living room. We spend so much time here, we figured you might as well be comfortable. And then I have a separate office. It's a little bit more private than the rest of the general office. My desk is covered with files, primarily people that we're collecting money from that are either late or perhaps don't intend to come back.
What is a typical day in your work day here like?
A typical day, it unlock the doors and we'll open the blinds up and turn on the radios. We have a radio in both offices, so the music goes on, and turn on the open sign. Other than that, it's basically just waiting for people to come in and take care of business. No lengthy process. It's not like a grocery store or a restaurant. No, I don't have to fry the money in the morning. It's or bake the bread, if you will, and it's just ready to go. Well, we do a combination of loans. We do some that involve the internet and also the people that actually walk in here physically to get their money. So a typical day, we open up, you know, we have a cup of coffee. Me and my sister might shoot the breeze a little bit for a little while, and then we go to work. Customers either coming in or we're checking the work that we have to do on the internet. So we have a number of emails we have to go through. Early in the week, a typical Monday is that we'll pull all the files for the people that are due to come in for that particular week. And then on our computer system, actually on a daily basis, people that are internet customers that have to be done, we're alerted to the fact that they have to be contacted. We give them a chance to find out if they're going to pay the loan off or if they want to actually pay the loan off and get a new one that same day. So we're either busy on the internet or we're busy as people start to come in during the day. Basically walk in and take care of business. We don't really take breaks to speak of. We're open from 9:30 until 6 o'clock. We don't close down for lunch or anything. Because a lot of people will come in here on their lunch hour or immediately after they get off work. So, you know, if they get off work at 5 o'clock, we're here till 6 to take care of them.
Sometimes when the kids come in, we'll give them balloons. You know, keeps them happy. And they keep them quiet while their parents conclude their business.
That was a crazy sound to hear in the headphones. Oh, my.
It's constant flow all day. There are some breaks where there's a little bit of downtime. But then there's collections to be done. There's a business to be run. And it is a full day all the time.
All right, so if you could just explain to us, maybe say it's a first-time client, someone who's never even done a cash loan before ever. This is their first time walking in here and even seeing you guys, hearing about this type of business at all. What goes on? Like, what do you ask for? What should they have? How do you know if you want a loan to them? Things like that.
Well, when a person walks in for the first time and inquires as to what we do, first of all, I try to sit down, if they've never done this before, explain to them what a payday loan is. A payday loan is a deferred deposit loan where we accept a post-dated check in lieu of any other collateral in exchange for a loan. California state law puts the maximum at a $255 loan, which is actually a $300 loan, but we're required to get our fee of $45 out of it first. So net is that they're getting $255 and leaving with us a post-dated check for $300 dated for their next payday. They've filled out a two-page application, which we review. It includes a reference, their employer, their pay dates. On the first time in, they've left their employer number, phone number, and their supervisor on the application. We don't call their supervisor, however, we do call Human Resources just to verify that they are currently employed. Our requirements are that they've had their current job for at least 6 months.
Oh, is there anyone that comes in here and you just obviously know, like say they're just gone off drugs or something like that?
This girl came in, I knew that she was on drugs. I gave her the benefit of the doubt. I thought, we'll go through the process. And as I'm preparing her file and going through the application, the phone rings and her employer was actually calling to me to verify the employment.
What?
Yeah, what is what I asked you? You're calling to verify this person's employer. Well, first of all, how did you know she was here? Well, it turns out it's an acquaintance, a boyfriend, whoever it happens to be on a cell phone outside. You know, I don't know how stupid some people think they are. You know, when people come in and I do have to turn them down, I always make sure I refer them to maybe one of the larger companies. Those people have much greater resources than I do. The money I lend here is my money. I'm not a bank. It actually comes out of my pocket. And so I can't put myself in a situation where, you know, I carry it too far and I'm lending to people that I know won't pay me back because I might as well go out in the street and just throw it. But it is my money and my sister's money. And when we don't get paid back, I mean, it means we don't get paid. I've seen people come in where they're truly almost buried. They can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. They need cash. What would normally fall into a criteria where we probably wouldn't lend to that person, and I know the other companies wouldn't lend to it, you just sometimes have a feeling about that person that you're not worried about getting paid back. You know it'll happen, and they have an urgent need. They need the cash to help them out, and I think that's where we take it a little step further than the other companies. Well, actually, there was a woman who just came in a few days ago, and she was a referral from an existing client, and there was no way in the world she would have qualified for a loan with our company. Her bank account was in terrible shape. She did have a job, you know, she was able to provide a paycheck stub, but But when she walked in, she came in with five children. And I could tell, she needed the money for something. I don't inquire as to what. You know, maybe it's food. Maybe it's just she wanted to do something special with her kids. And she, although she did not meet the criteria, we went ahead and lent the money. In part, it was because she was a referral and brought along the other customer who said, you know, she would totally vouch for her. And that helped, but it was just like, okay, you know, we need to help this woman out. And so we did. You certainly learn about people every single day. Learn the people you'd never trust again, or the people that, surprisingly, that you may have had doubts about that, you know, kind of give you a little hope for society in general. You know, the ones that, maybe shouldn't have not made that loan. And they come back and pay you. And that's the thing, you go, hey, you know what? I trusted the person. They made good on it. It makes you feel real good in that respect. I typically, the end of my day is always good. It takes a lot for me to have a bad day. As long as I can still walk out the door and know I'm heading home to see my family, and that's the most important thing for me. I don't just do this work just for myself. I do have a family to support, and that's what makes it all worthwhile. I can't imagine what would actually make a really bad day for me. Well, having somebody yell at you, I mean, I have kids, and that happens all the time. But, the bottom line is, your adrenaline gets going for about 5 minutes, and then I just move on. I mean, I'm not going to dwell on something like that all day. So it's part of any customer service business. You're going to have, I don't care if you're working at McDonald's or JCPenney or something. At some point, some customer is going to get irritated, and you handle it and just move on. Save the good thoughts for the good people that come in. And don't dwell on that. So, and that's, I think, pretty much why I leave here in a good mood every day.
That's right, Voice of Youth is in the house. Me, that's Greg, Amanda, and LaKoya. But first, I have some facts, and I have to say this. The national debt is increasing at an average of $2.02 billion per day. All right, everyone just listen about that. Billions. Those people at Cash Now might be paying big fees to borrow $300, but think about how much money we're paying for our $8.6 trillion worth in loans. That's our debt. I feel like as a nation, we're like those people who come in week after week to get a loan, digging themselves further into a hole till they owe everyone money. And China is our Cash Now, since they're purchasing our loans. How do you guys feel about that?
I just think it's so true. We're just getting deeper and deeper in debt because I feel that we're relying more and more on that way of living to get to live our life, to be able to have what we want to have.
Yeah, the average person today is actually in debt.
I was going to bring up that a lot of people are following the national trend, and a lot of Americans are in debt. And I was just going to throw out some facts to you guys. Do you know when the first credit card was issued? Can you just have a guess? How about
1951?
1980?
I think LaKoya was a little closer. It was the Diners Club card for businessmen in 1955. I have a few more for you guys. 40% of American families annually spend more than they earn. 60% of credit cards are not paid off monthly. Credit card companies took in $43 billion in card fees last year. Does this sound familiar to you guys?
People are probably paying so much more than what they actually owe just because of all the interest rates on it.
A house, you have to take out a loan to get a house.
Yeah.
And everyone wants to get a house, you know? But a lot of your life, you're going to be spending most of your money paying off that house, trying to pay that house.
Paying
to pay
off
that
things,
house.
Period. Cars or just...
And that's interest. Interest keeps piling up. With all this debt, it's not like it's just lazy people or compulsive spenders. Sometimes there's circumstances, you can't control. So have you guys had an experience like that?
Well, I remember this one time I went up to Oregon to stay with my grandparents for a while. And, I brought my cell phone and I didn't have, any of the free roaming or anything like that. So I came back, and it turns out that I had, like, this $750 bill just for talking on the phone to, like, my mom.
I can't really think of anything in particular where, like, I just really needed bread, like, desperately. But something that I can think that I owe bread on is definitely all my traffic tickets. I have, like, two or three, maybe, I don't even know, tickets out right now that are probably, like, $1,000 each or something. Mm. So it's going to take a while for me to, you know, being on my income right now and just trying to take care of everything else.
That always hurts. That always hurts because I bet that ticket was, like, maybe $75 or $100 when you first got it.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just going to hurt so much because you didn't, you know what I'm saying? You didn't have enough money at the time.
Yes.
In the past 45 minutes or so, we've heard from kids around the county, a local entrepreneur, and now we are leaving the local scene to get a more global picture. We have an interview with Professor Keith Hart, an anthropologist with an economic angle. Now, for those of you confused right now, anthropology is a study of humans in their society. Anthropologists don't focus on a certain society, but instead look at the culture of every society, from here in Santa Rosa to societies in Africa, and study them individually as well as how they relate internationally. Professor Hart, who focuses on how money works within the society, commutes from Paris by a train that goes under the ocean to teach about these aspects and more in London. He wrote a book called The Memory Bank, Money in an Unequal World, in which he warns that unless we take a good look at what money has become for the modern world, we're headed for disaster and doom. Greg got Professor Hart on the phone to explain his take on bread. Let's take a listen.
Hello?
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi.
So, can you just describe to me where you are right now, the time of day, the sounds outside, and what you've been doing and what you're about to do?
Okay, so it's almost 10 o'clock in the evening. I spent 4 hours looking after a small kid alone until my wife came home, and I'm sitting in a small room at the back of our apartment so that I don't wake up the kid or disturb my wife. I've had a hard day writing all day and I'm feeling pretty tired, but I'm sure you can brighten me up.
All right, so what is your official job title?
I'm Professor of Anthropology at Goldsmiths College in the University of London.
I read on your bio that you've done a lot of things, and I read that you worked as a gambler. Can you explain that?
Yeah, I mean, I was a working class kid, and I worked out that I had to pass exams to get into the free professions, but I was worried that I might not pass the exams. So at the age of 12, I started looking around for something else to do that would keep me going if I failed in my examination passing career, and I started betting on the horses, and that became my kind of principal secondary employment, and it financed my education.
Do you think that led to you being an anthropologist about money?
Yeah, when I did my doctoral fieldwork in West Africa, I gravitated to the studying the street economy, and I think that has something to do with where I grew up in Manchester and the kind of economic culture that city had and the way it has imprinted itself on me.
How is money different in developing or underground economies? Could you, like, give us an example from, like, Africa when you were doing your studies there?
I mean, for example, I hadn't realized until I went to Africa how much I took for granted the regularity of the economic affairs of my family. I mean, poor as we were, my father did have a wage and we did sort of pay the rent. And when I went there, you know, I would ask people questions like, you know, how much money do you spend on food in a week? And they didn't understand what I was talking about because their economic condition was that much more irregular. I mean, you know, if they had a job, which most of them didn't, I mean, their wage was very small. They would spend it very quickly. They had to hustle to stay alive. I mean, basically, you know, I mean, money was not something that was subject to a routine that they could predict.
Do you think there's enough money? Like, how is the problem of poverty related to money?
Basically, I mean, the system is, I mean, the market is like a voting system in which people vote with their money. And obviously, in a voting system where people vote with money, people who have a lot of money carry a lot more weight than people who don't. I mean, at the moment, I mean, that we have the 200 richest men in the world, and they are men, have assets equal to the economies of 48 countries. Unless there are political checks by ordinary people on the very rich, they will organize society in such a way that the poor remain neglected and their interests are served.
So, what is money?
I mean, in my book, I argued that money is principally a way of keeping track of our exchanges. It's a memory bank. It's a way of storing records of really, you know, many exchanges that we make with society. Money is a store of our, a kind of record of our, and the potential for our dealings with society, at least those dealings that involve calculation and exchange.
I read that you have a four-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
And, what does she say or ask about it?
I just tell her occasionally she can't have everything she wants when she wants, and in any case, it's my money, not hers. Because every day she's got this new thing she wants to buy, you know, and so for me, you know, my interactions with my daughter are not abstractly about what money is, but about when and how she can negotiate with me to buy something on her behalf. You know, that's obviously we're not at a position. She's never asked me what money is, and I've never tried to tell her. But I mean, we are trying to work out a kind of power relationship in which money plays a major part, because a lot of the things she wants require being bought with money.
And do you think that's a metaphor for the world?
I think that the way we deal with our kids in relation to money is a very powerful expression of the kind of unequal society we're in. Yes, it is. I mean, I guess the reason that I find it so intriguing to work on money is that I keep coming back to, you know, the main questions that concern us in society at large and in our, you know, intimate lives with our kids and so on. I mean, I think I'm a bit unusual. I mean, I pay much more attention to money questions than most people would.
You said that you every day you think about money. And what is some of the daily thoughts that you have about money, I guess? Like the questions that come up in
your
mind.
Well, the daily thought that I have about money is how to make sure that my money doesn't go away in the coming crash. I mean, I'm absolutely convinced that the dollar is in free fall and that the world economy is extremely vulnerable at this time. I think it's being kept afloat by housing prices in America and Britain especially, and the evidence is that this housing bubble is about to burst. I think, you know, that the stock markets are kept afloat by a large amount of funny money which is being pumped into the world economy by the federal government and others like it and by the banks.
I didn't see that one coming. If the world will crash, what can I and my friends do, and what will the world look like after?
The purpose of my work is to give people better understanding of what we might do to avoid this outcome. I have no idea how bad it will get if that outcome occurs. All I can do is try to save myself. And, you know, I mean, I've sold all my property and I've got out of the stock market. I'm holding various financial instruments and commodities, and I'm hoping that some of that will survive the crash. I mean, I have no idea, you know, how anybody else will cope with it. I mean, I think, you know, the way most people deal with money is by burying their head in the sand. They don't want to know, really. I mean, they wouldn't be able to sleep at night if they knew what I knew, what I know.
You said, if they knew what I know. Tell me one thing that you know that's just really scary, I guess.
Okay, the Fed has been printing dollars like there's no tomorrow since last December. It's basically pumping dollars without any restraint as a way of trying to avoid the economic collapse I'm talking about, but ultimately making it more, making the world economy more vulnerable in the long run. The world is being held hostage by an American federal government that is basically playing Texas Hold'em with the rest of the world.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm going to have nightmares tonight, thanks to you. But thank you very much, and I appreciate you taking this time out. Thank you very much again.
Okay, thank you too.
Goodbye.
Bye. Money.
So, Al, what are we listening to?
Well, Tom, we're listening to Voice of Youth, The Bread Show.
You heard right. You're tuned to an in-depth definition of bread, Voice of Youth style. We just heard from economic anthropologist Keith Hart. But before you listeners go selling your houses, we want to share a little research on Professor Hart's idea of a coming crash. We called a few economists to confirm Professor Keith Hart's gloomy prediction. They were a little dubious. However, we did confirm in editorials by Paul Krugman in the New York Times and others that the housing bubble is a concern to many people. And many people have issues with the Fed printing money to fuel the economy. But what do you guys think? He talks about the future crash. Do you think it's possible?
After I did this interview, I talked to my dad about it, and he wasn't really buying it. You know, he said that, I don't know, he just didn't buy into the fact that, you know, America's going to crash that hard. He did feel that eventually that America isn't going to be the power that it is today, because he just felt that, you know, you can't keep going on and on and on and continuing, you know. I mean, every empire has to fall at one time, you know.
So how does where we come from affect our opinions of money? Like, how have where you come affected what you think about money?
All right, where I come from, I just come from a family where it's like, I think you go to work, you earn your money, you're happy with that money, you raise a family, and you don't really have any other dreams of going any place further. Like, I feel like my parents, I don't know, I don't... Sometimes I feel like my parents don't really have dreams, you know, like my dreams, because all they did was they went to nursing school. He went to learn how to be a plumber.
But think about it, like at one time,
yeah,
they probably did.
They did. That's how I grew up, though, is when I saw my parents when I was a little kid, they already had those jobs. And my whole life, I've seen them just work those jobs and not really do much.
Yeah, it's kind of sad if you think about it.
It's like, what are you guys... I don't know. Sometimes I trip off that, like, what are you guys living for? Like, what is tomorrow going to bring you?
I don't know. Money is weird. It really is. I mean, as I get older, you know, money is not what it used to be for me. But from where I come from, like, the people, it seems like everything is just money motivated, for real. You know, now that I get older and I can really realize... I mean, money is just, it motivates everything, you know, that I know, or people from where I come from, you know, not really having nothing, not really born into anything. You got to work to get whatever you got, you know. Money drives a person to do any and everything, you know. Somebody will sell crack to their own mom, you know what I mean, just to get a buck. Men will sacrifice their own families just so that they can be, you know, the man in the neighborhood or whatever, you know, just so they can be the person that has the best car or like the nicest house. But is all that worth your family, you know? Well, my mind is kind of spinning from all this talk about bread. After all, it's almost time to say goodbye. But first, let's touch on these three key aspects of bread. Since my characteristic of bread is how it changes over time, how it stores value, let's get some predictions, and we'll all listen in 10 years to see who's right. How do you guys think money will change in 10 years? Will there be a crash in the system as we have it today?
Yeah, I don't think we can stay on this path for even that much longer. And also, what's going to be coming up is kind of the oil crisis. Like, it is a fossil fuel and it will run out.
And not just the oil. I mean, a lot of our natural resources we're running out of, slowly but surely.
All right, I have a question also. Since my topic was about bread and its role, let's say, kind of like a lubricating device, making the market move more smoother, but it seems like a lot of people get stuck. How do you think we can finally get over certain people being very poor and some being very rich? I understand that, you know, there's always going to be people who are a little bit more poor, and that there's going to be people who are richer. You know, that's just the way of the world. You know, some people will want to make more money or whatever. But I'm talking about people being so extremely poor and people being so extremely rich that it's disgusting in both ways. You know what I mean?
I think that there has to be a compromise. And it seems that, I mean, without even being said, if people just read into it enough, that that's not willing to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, really, people talk about it, whatever, but realistically, I don't think that people are really ready to make that drastic of a compromise, because it would have to be a compromise between the wealthier class to say, hey, you know, I maybe don't need all this. How can I help these people who need it? Then there has to be a compromise between the lower class to stop feeling like everything is owed to them. You know what I mean? And being willing to work with these people who are trying to maybe work with them. You know what I mean?
As for my question, well, I was covering how like a dollar is supposed to equal another dollar. Absolutely, in order for the money system to work. Well, it seems part of what makes it not true on the personal level is that people have different burning desires to get that dollar. So it means different things. So what motivates you to get money?
I can't even express to you guys in here and to the listeners out there just how much money drives me, you know what I mean? And how much I just need money for. And me, I feel like, I don't know, and I'm sure that a million people feel this way. Say you drive by like the car dealership and you see that Escalade or whatever, and you mean you think in your mind like, oh, I'm gonna have that, or you know what I mean? But realistically, out of all the people who drive by that thing and see that thing every day and that same thing passes through their mind, realistically, like, all of them are not gonna have that, you know? But that just seems to be the way of thinking that we have, you know what I mean? Just kind of maybe as Americans, maybe as young adults, or just whatever, for just me, you know what I mean? And I gotta have it, like, for real. I don't know, there's something in me. I don't know if it's like bad blood.
What I was thinking about, what motivates me to get money, is that feeling when you don't have money. Yeah. And that feeling when you want to do something so bad or want to make something happen.
Or you see other people with something.
Yeah, and you don't have it, or you can't accomplish it through money. Mm-hmm. That burns me so bad. And I can't even explain that feeling, because it's like, I don't know. To me, it just burns me up inside.
When I was younger, man, I can't even tell you guys how many times I was the person that didn't have whatever, you know, like that cool pair of shoes, or like enough money to buy like just lunch at school. You know what I mean? I had to go to the free lunch line.
Yeah,
like, me
too.
There was so many times that I was that person, you know what I'm saying? And I can't do that no more, you know what I mean? And I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, you know what I'm saying? But I can't be in that position, because that is not a good feeling at all, you know what I'm saying? To just always want what other people have, or just always feel like you need this thing to be like a something. Yeah, you know what I mean? So we've come to an end. And just to close out our show, I'm going to ask you guys this last final question that I think is so important and just really needs to be asked. And that is, are there some things that bread just can't buy, or that you just can't put a price tag on?
Like relationships that you have with, you know, your family. That's not money. That's just love right there, you know. Relationships you have with boyfriend and girlfriend. Although you guys do involve money, like maybe going to the movies or the times and the laughs and all the memories and the fights or whatever, that's not money. That's just human emotions right there.
To put it into a category, it's just experience. Like what you experience in life, there's no way that, you know, anyone can take that away from you.
It can't take away, things from the past. Like, you can't take away pain. You can try to hide around money, but you can't take away the fact of what happened in the past happened, you know?
Can't take away the fact that you mm-hmm. are who you are and things are exactly. what they are. And this is just to kind of sum up what you guys both said. The thing for me is that money can't buy you. You know what I mean? Don't let money make you who you are. Or make you out to be the person that you feel you gotta be. Because a lot of the times, man, I can't even tell you, growing up, you know, living kind of wild and stuff in the Bay Area for a while, I was meeting all kinds of girls who just put price tags on themselves. You know what I'm saying? They're out there in the streets being a prostitute. You're putting a price tag on yourself. You know what I'm saying? And not even that. Girls who are just trying to dress cute for boys and stuff like that. Like, you're putting a price on yourself. Not a literal price, yeah. but you're putting a price on yourself. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Guys who are out here thinking that they got to be manly and do this and kill people and fight and sell drugs or just be this way to certain people, you're putting a price on yourself. You know what I mean? Money is a paper. You know what I'm saying? Money can be burnt. Money can be torn. Money, I mean, if you tear a dollar bill into 1,000 pieces, do you have a dollar bill anymore? No. You have shredded paper. That's nothing. So now you have nothing, you know? So I think people just need to don't put a price tag on yourself. Because, I mean, us as a person, you know what I mean? We can't put a price tag on us. How about you guys listening out there? What's your relationship with bread? What does it get you? What can never be bought or sold for you? Think on it. Till next week, we're signing off.
Goodbye.
Peace.
Peace out.
This is the Probation Inspired production staff saying
good night. Thanks for listening.
Voice of Youth would like to thank
Professor Keith Hart
for his rather unsettling words.
I mean, they wouldn't be able to sleep at night if they knew what I knew.
Charlie Hines
from Cash Now
for the great sounds.
Editor Katie Stolman.
Katie Stolman, that's you, huh?
For not making things sound like this.
Voice of Youth Director Tatiana Harrison
for her cameo laughter.
Our anonymous story writers.
And of course us.
Mike Phillips.
Gabriel Mort.
Tom Walters.
Al Oates.
And myself, Ian Kern. And now I'm done with my community service. Woohoo!
Good luck to you guys. Don't give the black man food, give the red man liquor. Red man food, black man liquor. Give yellow man tool. Also give them pan, make them pull gold from river. Give black man crack, Glocks and ting. Give the red man craps, slot machines. Now bring it back, 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 bring it back.
All right, is that it? Yeah. Whew, let's all breathe.